I love the colorful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. On the wind that lifts her perfume through the air.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitation. I'm picking up.
Hello, I'm Solazar, and welcome to Good Vibrations Radio, Tools for Transformation, right here on Radio Monterey. Now, quantum physics tells us that we are all energy vibrating at different frequencies, and in Good Vibrations Radio, we bring you information that allows you to change the vibrational frequency of your life. We are your source for everyday alchemy, so you can take the lead in your life and turn it into gold. Now, Good Vibrations Radio is made possible through the sponsorship of Magic for Life, which is the owner-operator of Radio Monterey, bringing you shows and information unfiltered, uncensored by the corporate media. Visit RadioMonterey.com to become more familiar with the shows and the information being brought to you and be informed in your life. In addition, Magic for Life is the promoter-producer of the Rhoda Psychic Fair, returning to the Monterey Fairgrounds October 29th and 30th. For over 33 years, the Rhoda Psychic Fair has been bringing the best of spiritual, metaphysical, healing, reading, and vendors to the Monterey County area. So visit rhodapsychicfair.com, sign up for the email list, and remember, it's Halloween, it's Samhain, it's All Saints Day, All Souls Day. It's the time when the veils between the worlds are thinnest, and that means it's time to have fun. So you can come in costume, come as who you used to be, come as who you might become, come as who you are. But anyway, sign up for that email list and come October 29th and 30th. To the Monterey Fairgrounds. Well, we spoke yesterday quite at length about the Gemini new moon and the Grand Cross in the mutable signs that hit us on Saturday evening, at least on this coast, the Pacific coast. So there is still that energy going around. There's turmoil and upheaval, and things are shifting and changing and churning even as we speak. I'm not going to spend a lot of time going into more detail with that today, but as you know, I love me some Day by Day with James Allen. Now, in 1903, James Allen wrote his essay, As a Man Thinketh, taking the title from chapter 23, verse 7 of Proverbs, which says, As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. To remind us that we are the framers and creators of our reality. Our present reality today is a direct outcome of our past thoughts and actions. But each day, we wake up anew to a new day and a new opportunity, which means each day we have the opportunity to create our future now, in the present moment now. Our past thoughts and actions don't predict our future. Our current thoughts and actions create our future. And in Day by Day by James Allen, his words have been broken up into a little segment for each day of the month. And today, the seventh day of June, the last month in the creative cycle of the year, James Allen tells us about sowing and reaping. Good thoughts and actions can never produce bad results. Bad thoughts and actions can never produce good results. This is but saying that nothing can come from corn but corn, and nothing from nettles but nettles. When we plant the seeds in our mind, if they're a negative seed and they continue to germinate inside of our mind, the outcome that we will produce is negative. Period. End of story. If we plant a positive thought and continue to germinate that in the garden of our mind, we will produce a positive outcome. So those people who say, I can't attract something to myself through good intentions and good thoughts and visualization, all I ask you to do is look how much negative you've attracted to yourself through your bad thoughts, your bad intentions, your bad visualizations. How many times have you said, I have to make sure I don't do something, and you ended up doing it? Why? Because you created that intention in the moment. It's the old trick of saying to somebody, don't think of a pink elephant. Well, the minute you're told that, you have to think of a pink elephant to not think about it. So we are the governors of what goes into our mind. And what goes into our mind will be the framer of our beliefs, our thought patterns, our value systems, all by starting to plant that seed and allowing it to germinate. So a reminder today for the seventh day of June, and June being the last month of the creative cycle of the year, this is when our intentions become the reality we'll live in the second half of the year. James Allen tells us, good thoughts and actions can never produce bad results. Bad thoughts and actions can never produce good results. This is but saying that nothing can come from corn but corn, nothing from nettles but nettles. And in today's Daily Word, they've told us, I have the mind of the divine. I trust in the divine, and I'm grateful for the gift of the divine mind. You know, it says, I need to make sure that I am thinking, functioning, and operating from a place of divinity in my thoughts, which goes with what James Allen is saying. Reframe that negative thought. That person who upset you yesterday, reframe how you think about them, even if you're still upset. Don't think the negative toward them. Remember, what we put out comes back. And I'll take a quick jump today to wish happy birthday to all those June 7th birthdays and remind them that you are very impulsive. You tend to act quickly. You're easily discouraged. And although you can be loyal friends and are always anxious to help those in need, you're sympathetic and sensitive. You love with your whole heart. You suffer deeply if love is not returned to you with an equal strength. So all you June 7th birthday people, happy birthday, and there's a touch of insight for you on this day. Which leads us to our guest today. We had a little snafu a couple of months ago, and we're fortunate that we were able to reschedule with Sherry Sharifi Brown. Now, she spent her life between Iran and the United States. She was born a Shiite Muslim in Isfahan, Iran. She came to the United States to study at California State University, Los Angeles, where she earned her Bachelor of Science in Engineering. She also subsequently got a postgraduate degree from Harvard. She returned to Iran for work as a structural engineer, and after the Iranian Revolution, she moved back to the United States, where she's lived for over 30 years. Although being born a Muslim in pre-revolutionary Persia, she's converted to Christianity in school, and she's married into a Jewish American family. And today she's here about her book, The Seven Commandments for Happiness and Prosperity, to illustrate the fortunes and misfortunes of people and what the similarities are between those three Abrahamic religions. Sherry Sharifi Brown, welcome to Good Vibrations Radio.
Thank you, Solarza. It's nice to be here.
And so we're so grateful that you are able to be here. Let's start at the beginning about being born and raised as a Shiite Muslim in pre-revolutionary Iran. And also, let us know what that was like and how that experience has shaped you and what you feel about our relationship with the United States and Iran today.
Well, I was when I was in Iran, and I grew up in Iran, all I knew was Islam. And we couldn't read the Quran because it not only it was in Arabic, but it was in a complicated way, which makes me wonder if any of these people that claim to be a Muslim even understand it. And in Farsi, it's totally, totally convoluted and very difficult to understand because it's very poetic. So I read it in English. But I raised hearing that anybody who is not a Muslim is going to hell. Anybody that doesn't pray five times a day, it's going to hell. For me, who was searching for God and what is the right way, as Muslims only taught us, the scholars, that anything I was basically doing, I was going to go to hell. If my father had a glass of wine, he was going to go to hell. I came to the States. And since I went to a Catholic college in Vermont, I became introduced to Christianity. And afterwards, when I heard that Christians also say anybody who is not Christian is going to hell, I started reading all of these books in English myself. That was like 27, 28 years ago. Started from Torah, then New Testament, then Quran. And up to this day, I read a chapter of each one every day. I have read all of these books many, many times from cover to cover, but each time I read a different publication because I want to compare the discrepancies between one publication to another, which to my chagrin, I find a lot of discrepancies, even in Bible, from one publication to the other. So the only essence of the whole three scripture what I found is the commandments that haven't changed in anything. Mm-hmm. 10 commandments of Moses, 2 commandments of Jesus, and 7 commandments of Muhammad. So mm-hmm. I consolidated these and got disposed of all the redundancies. For instance, all of them say believe in one God or believe in hereafter. So I came up with 7 that is very easy to follow and realized that basically everything else in the Bible or in Quran is really minor. Quran, there's massive amount of misinformation about religion as whole and Islam in particular, caused me to think to write this book because certain things like Muhammad saying that this is not a new religion, therefore he condemns the titles of Christianity and Judaism in Quran and says that these are just words and titles. Everybody should believe in one God, and that's what Islam means. But I said in my book, you can call yourself Christian, Jewish, as long as you respect each other's religion, because they all say the same thing. The similarities totally outweighs the differences. These books are all these three prophets out of 124,000 prophets, these were the three prophets that God gave message for us. He says that, God says in the Quran that I gave the law to Moses, I blessed Jesus with my spirit, and I gave the book to Muhammad. So it's like
jump in here a moment. I'm sorry. So one point I want to make for the listeners, that anytime any of these books talk about hell, I think they're sending me to Texas. That's just my opinion. but the other thing is, sequentially, though, we have from the what we call the Abrahamic religions, we have Judaism, and then Christianity, and then Islam. So even within the context of the writing of the Quran, there's kind of an inclusion of Judaism and Christianity. Is that so?
Two-thirds of Quran is based on Christianity and Judaism. Mm-hmm. There is stories about Moses and patience and how God talked to Moses and how Christ, Muhammad called Moses and Jesus Muslim, because they believe in one God. Jesus Christ never knew what Christianity was. It was flourished by his apostles after he died.
Yeah, predominantly Paul.
He never said that homosexuality, none of them ever said homosexuality is not redeemable. Jesus Christ didn't even mention it. Muhammad actually says it is redeemable. Now, the apostles come, instead of making people follow the messages of Christ or Muhammad, or they change it somehow, they revise it. They're supposed to just be in continuation, teaching them per time. Now that time has changed, maybe it's not important to do five-time prayers. You can do condense it to three-time prayers. That's what Ali did. Or maybe it's not important not to eat pork. It's okay. Yet his simple message, Jesus Christ's simple message, got lost. After 300 years of his death, basically it was the beginning of the end of Christianity and his simple message, to the point where they would crucify people if they didn't eat pork. He never
Touch on, because in your book, you touch on, of course, you know what is religion and the purpose of religion. And so I'm going to do a lead-in statement just to kind of lay a foundation. I'm a firm believer that everyone should have, it helps people to have a spiritual practice. And for me, that's a practice of choice. But I think going to your point right now about, you know, Jesus' message was lost in the development of Christianity, and Muhammad's message may have been lost in the development of Islam as a religion. Religion, to me, is a business. And when people create a business, they create rules around their business for sustaining the business.
Exactly, yeah.
It's not the message of the prophet. It's not the message of Jesus. It's not even the primary message within Judaism.
So they shouldn't call themselves Muslims if they are going to act exactly the opposite of what Quran says. Quran says that jihad is an act of, it's a defensive act, not an offensive, violent act. Christ taught us about love and peace, not the fact that everybody has to give 20% of your children have to be converted to Christianity. They forced Christianity, people to become Christian, as if his message was different from Moses. He was
right.
A Jew.
And in Christ's place, too, I'm sorry to cut in. You know, here where he heals the leper. He goes to rescue the woman accused of adultery. Not rescue may not be the right term, but in essence, Christ was a loving, forgiving figure.
Every one of them. Muhammad was a loving, forgiving person. However, these religions were hijacked by people who were after politics and real estate and money. Muhammad never intended to have five different type of Sunnis and three different kind of Shia. He wanted everybody. Christ didn't want to have so many different branches, and everybody kills the other one as if there was so many Christ. No, if you follow Christ, he was one person. And as you said, we are the author of our own choices. And true happiness is when you look through your love and light from your heart, and self-respect and respect for other people and their beliefs, instead of getting everybody to want to bend to your ways. How many millions of people Ottoman Empire killed under the banner of Islam, or Abbasid? They raided Iran, Zoroastrians, and they killed Islam to Iran, whereas Zoroastrians also believed in higher power. the reason why they were, and I was, when I was growing up, they said they were worshipping fire, but they were not. After, now I understand that they were only staring into fire to get connected with the higher power for the energy, because there is a clay tablet that Cyrus the Great wrote, and it is in British Museum right now. And the first Bill of Rights was written by him 5,000 years ago, and it talks about higher power and the energy, that if we stay in the same course of the God's energy, when there's anger, jealousy, anything negative is satanic. It really interferes with that energy. If somebody is mad at you for no reason, you have to think of that person as being diseased. Get away from him. Don't catch his virus. Because you have to realize that this is satanic. You can't ignore the existence of Satan. You can't deal with it by thinking it doesn't exist. It does exist, but God is more powerful. So if this, the way that Muhammad puts it, if you don't commit the big sins, I will forgive you, God said, the small sins. Now, what are the big sins? Basically, in the commandments, the 19 commandments, that's been condensed to 7, very easy to follow. None of these rules and regulations that is man created for political purpose is valid. None of those people who just take a bomb and kill 3,000 people in Twin Tower, 2,000 people in Twin Tower, doing anything that Muhammad said, or Islam. America didn't exist during Muhammad. What is this hatred for death to America all the time?
I will have to state to that, and I know you're aware of this. I want to state that we're talking to Sherry Sharifi Brown. Her website is the7commandments.com, and her book is The Seven Commandments for Happiness and Prosperity, with a comparison of the three Abrahamic religions, because she has it from her upbringing as a Shia Muslim in pre-revolutionary Iran, as well as her conversion to Christianity and her marriage into an American Jewish family. So she has a great deal of experience, and as she said, she reads all of them, a chapter a day from the different books, to stay very current. But one of the things that I started to lead into is that there is a need in the human nature to have knowledge that no one else has. In other words, I have to have some special knowledge. And because I have this special knowledge, I have to be right. And that leads, I believe, in my opinion, to some of this friction between the religions. But going back to your primary question is, what's the hatred against the U.S.? The U.S. CIA incurred itself following World War II into the Middle East in very deceptive and devious ways. And, for instance, helped Egypt build their torture program, helped Iran, essentially put the Shah in power after an election in Iran, and helped him build his secret police and torture. So the U.S. has been engaged, in my opinion, as well in what you might call satanic acts in the Middle East, which some people have not forgotten, regardless of what the U.S. has done today. Muhammad had nothing against the U.S., and Jesus had nothing against the U.S., and Moses had nothing against the U.S. because it didn't exist.
Right.
But our actions are karmic, and what we've done has created a karmic response. The challenge is, do I hate your children because my parents and your parents had a friction? And we're not doing a good job of cleaning that up.
Unfortunately, we get involved in these countries with lack of knowledge, without knowing the culture of these people, without knowing that these people are not ready for, they need a dictator. If we had not gotten rid of the so-called dictators of Iran, like Hosni Mubarak, Shah, or later on Gaddafi, Saddam Hussein, there was no way that ISIS, at least they were holding ISIS. If they weren't good to their own people, at least they were our allies. Now, what did we learn by just overthrowing them without having somebody to replace them? And just leave, this was not humanitarian, as Carter thought it was. It was just making a chaotic situation in the Middle East that is really hard to get rid of. We helped them build missiles, TOW and Maverick missiles. We helped them build all the underground projects. Now, when we do that, because we did it because at that time, Russia was the enemy, and since Russia had Cuba in the border of America, we wanted to have a military base in the border of Russia. Mm-hmm. But then why, without studying all of this, we take the country and give it to somebody that from youth he was telling America is the great Satan. Everybody knew Khomeini was exiled because he was enemy of America. Why would we put him in charge? We spent $6.5 billion to do that revolution in 1979, which was never told in the news. Nobody ever heard it. After we helped them build underground project, and then we're happy, Carter was happy that we're not going to send them to sell them the raw material when they bought uranium from Russia and China. I don't understand why we don't do our homework before we walk in and overthrow Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was alive, the internet would have been cut off in the whole country, and they couldn't, the ISIS now, it couldn't recruit people by internet and all this social media. So
I think part of it is, I'm going to say this, as a person born and raised in the U.S., is that we're arrogant. And I think a lot of our arrogance comes from isolation.
Yes.
Here's what I mean by that. We're not in Europe where we're surrounded by so many other countries and people cross borders visiting and exchanging and communing and experiencing other cultures on a regular basis. Or even in the Middle East where that's possible and people are able to see what's going on in the other countries. We're relatively isolated where we are in the United States. Sure, we do that with Canada, and sure, we do that with Mexico, but that's very limited. You know, our the closest thing we have to crossing borders is going state to state. So as a result, we see more of our country than anything else. On a regular basis. Our experience is our country on a regular basis. And so we tend to think that our way is the right
way. The only way. And the percentage of people who even are bilingual is so low in America, only because everywhere you go, they speak English. We don't try hard enough, and we misunderstand people when before we walk into Iran and overthrow Shah, before we walk in and overthrow this person, we have to realize that they are our allies. And even if they're not, it's not really our problem so much. Let's solve the problem internally before we decide for humanity that, like Carter did. Now you think it's better now? I'd like to see how many millions of people have been killed. The price of oil has gone up to roof. Everything was copacetic until they decided that, they don't know. They should study to see who is the enemy, who's the villain, who's the victim. It's just because Shah has money. If you read Carter's book, you see there's somehow... he hates him because he has money. He said he was digging in his pocket for $20 billion and in another pocket for silk scarf. What is that minor things that we hang on to? We overthrow him because he was elegant? Did we overthrow him because what? Because he was trying to raise the price of oil to $3.
The human rights violations that that I know struck Carter. So, and I'm not going to debate whether he should have overthrown him. I'm not trying to make that case. But I know it was very much because Jimmy Carter, if nothing else, was a very moral man. Not a fanatical man, but a moral man. And the human rights violations presented that the Shah used in order to keep stay in power were very disturbing to him. And second to that, it was the belief at that time that the Iranian people wanted the return of the Shah.
They did not. I was there during the revolution.
It understand.
Very
I'm not
organized.
Did. I'm saying it was the, that belief. That's
exactly.
What was discussed in the U.S.
Misrepresentation.
This is what the Iranian people want, and the Shah has been violating the rights of the people.
Now, do you know the most inhumane acts are happening right now? For instance, since Muhammad said you cannot kill a virgin, what they do, they rape the girl before they kill him. So it's so confusing, the act of these people, which I believe they can't even read or write, most of them. They put people, we go after Osama bin Laden, spent 7 years of our time looking to kill the wrong man when the head of Al-Qaeda was Al-Zawahiri, who was in jail during Anwar Sadat. He was saying that CIA or Death to America behind the bar. We let somebody like that out. He goes and recruits some charismatic, rich Yemeni guy like Osama. He puts him in front of the camera. These people who come and give interviews and they're in front of the camera, they're not really the main guys. Al-Baghdadi is the head of ISIS. But what did he do? He put Jihadi John, and then we're just so gullible, and we believe we kill these guys instead of going and getting rid of the head of the snakes. So humanity and humanitarian is something to have. I have great respect for it, but we have to really know what we're doing. We have to do our homework.
Oh, absolutely. I certainly agree. You're speaking a lot of wisdom concerning our genuine lack of understanding of other cultures. And we do have people that study it, supposedly it's their expertise. But unfortunately, I've yet to see within our political structure the people who are executing or determining policy, I've yet to see them have the understanding of the cultures that they're executing the policy or determine. I mean, what we did in Iraq, even when we said in Bremer, and what he did to disband the administration, disband the military, essentially tear down any left residual infrastructure that could have run the country.
That's right. And then we put, when they put Maliki in charge of Iraq, I was actually kind of hopeful because finally, we had somebody to replace them with. But what happened? ISIS gave Maliki a better deal, so he turned against us. We have to know if we are overthrowing somebody, we're going to put somebody that is our ally or is not leaving the country and the Middle East in shambles. It's too late now to do anything because these are bloodthirsty people. It says it in Quran. God said these are bloodthirsty. They're really actually happy with beheading people. So what happened, the same people that Muhammad came to straighten and to make them righteous, when he died because of the money and power that Abu Bakr had, he was a governor, he took over the Islam, and you see what happens, all of these different Sunnis. Now Sunnis are killing each other. Yazidis are Sunnis. Why are they getting raped? All of these Yazidi girls are getting raped by ISIS. Why so much chaos in the world now? We should actually, if anything, we should have been more advanced and more humane after all of this atrocity of Crusaders and Ottoman empires. But yet it's getting worse.
Well, we don't learn well. I mean, as a race of people, Homo sapiens do not seem to learn well from history. I mean, when you look at the political scene right now in the United States and you see these rabid people going for the misogynistic, homophobic, racist Donald Trump and the things he's saying and acting like, well, he's speaking truth, it just shows how easy it is to appeal to the lowest common denominator and stir them up emotionally. That's what ISIS is doing. That's what Donald Trump is doing.
Media is responsible for a lot of these, all of these misunderstandings, because we really never hear the right news. During the revolution, the same incident was portrayed in the news in Iran, totally 180 degrees different than the same news, the same incident in if you listen to it in American television.
Yeah.
And so it's people listen to what they hear and they believe what they hear. Nobody really reads. When it comes to religion, no Muslim is willing to read Bible. No Christian or Jewish is willing to read Quran. So everybody is just listening to what they hear and they act upon it without knowledge of what is going on.
So do you feel that very often the challenges within the Muslim religion are because of the imams and how they choose to express to the people the meaning of the Quran?
They're not even Muslim, Solar. They have none of the acts these people do have anything to do with Islam. I don't even think that these young people that have been brainwashed by them, ISIS, I don't think they have even read Quran, or they could even probably read or write. And the few that have read, they interpret it the way they want.
Yeah, that's what I mean, because, for instance, in the United States, you're familiar even with what I call the evangelical Christian movement. They're
yes.
very radical.
Right.
You know, they're even the ones that believe in the, you know, the vanishing, and, you know, they
right.
all go away, which is not in the Bible. They've extracted something and turned it into a whole subculture. But what I'm saying is most of those people are listening to what their preachers say. So
yes.
if their preacher tells them that, you know, if you take this from Leviticus and this from Job and this from Proverbs and this from David and this from the Epistle to the Galatians, what it really means is...
Right.
You know, and then they run out and say, well, that's what the Bible says.
No, but because they take it out of context. I met
yes.
Vince Bugliosi. He was the DA for Charles Manson. He came here. He gave me a book that he had written. He knew the Bible by heart, I'm telling you. He was quoting. And when I read his book, and he was agnostic. I don't know if you know that or not. When I read his book, I realized what he's doing. He takes one thing out of context and then he elaborates on it without saying that, okay, if, for instance, in Quran, Muhammad talks about Christians in one place that are non-believers or treat them like enemy, in another part said Christianity is just a title. It's not, these are not followers of Christ. They're mimicking. Acting like Christian is a different religion than Judaism because Christ was Jewish. They don't read that part, but then they take one part out of context. That's the problem, unfortunately. Some of it been done purposefully, some of it out of ignorance. I'm not sure what, which one, but this is really unacceptable. For people should not be unhappy the way they are. Happiness is our birthright if we live a conscious life and if we live a righteous life. This is what we really need to be.
So what would you like us in the Seven Commandments for Happiness and Prosperity, what would you like us to gain from that so that we could pursue a happy and fulfilled life?
I think if we only follow the tenets of the Seven Commandments, only And don't not to worry. If we want to go to church or synagogue, that's fine. If you don't want to drive on Saturday, that's fine. But that doesn't make you go to heaven, or not doing it doesn't make you go to hell. The only thing that is important, the base of everything, what God wants from us, is the seven commandments. You just practice and that.
Would you mind if I read those out quickly for the listeners?
Yes. No, of course. Yes. Read it, please.
The first one is, believe in the one God and know that he is the creator of the seen and unseen. And I'm going to truncate a little bit. I'm not going to have everything that's written here.
Yes.
And it said, ward the evil. Remember, the more you stay away from evil, the further away evil gets from you. And I want to tell the listeners, too, that's the message we've been saying for over a month leading into this month, that it's important to shed those things that are not serving you in your life. And a lot of that is, what is evil that's around you that you've been accepting and absorbing? So ward the evil. Number three was believe in hereafter and know that because of the flow of energy, everything has to balance in the end.
Yeah.
Four, don't steal. Someone else's money is not yours. Their spouse is not yours. Their work is not yours.
Okay.
Don't be a charitable giver. And it's important here, you say, you know, if you don't have the money, be charitable with your time. But I think this is really important, Sherry, because this, of course, they're all important, but this is about us recognizing that we're part of a collective, and
yes,
we do what we can to assist each other.
Yes, and wipe somebody's tear, that's a giving, that's part of giving. Put a smile on somebody's face. It may take nothing to do that. So that's going to be a charity. Do it from the bottom of your heart. If you give money, you don't have to tell others. You don't have to get up other people to know that you gave money to the poor. Because as soon as you do that, you are indicating that their opinion is more important than God's opinion. Because God knows when you're being given. So in order for you to get 10 times back reward, as God is promising us, you really should do it quietly, without showing off to other people about it, because maybe the person you're helping has a lot of pride. You don't really want to tell people that this person is poor and I'm helping him.
Mm.
I have a foundation, and most of the people we help, they don't even know who I am, and I really like to keep it this way.
And then number six, of course, was honor your parents.
Yes.
Could you tell us the importance of this?
Yes, very important, because all three scriptures say that. Honoring your parents is actually part of the Ten Commandments also of Moses. Now, you might say that this is your duty. It doesn't matter who your parents were or what mistakes they did. Your duty is to honor them. They have to be honored by having you. Now, if I have heard that from so many people that, well, what if a father rapes the daughter? How could she honor them? Well, my answer is, instead of revenging from your father by becoming a porno star or a prostitute, revenge by becoming very successful, and then don't let him be in your life. Make him be honored to have you as a daughter. You don't have to revenge, and you don't have to prove anything to him. But that's another way of honoring him. If he's a nice, if you're a normal family and your father is ill in the hospital, make the time to go see him. Honor him. Respect him. There's so many children I see there disrespectful to their parents. This is what specifically all the three scriptures tell us. We have to honor our parents, make them happy with us.
And then you also say number seven is to pray continuously.
Yes.
Now that may seem overwhelming to people. Could you explain it a little?
Yes. Well, because Muslims pray on Fridays, Christians Jews pray on Saturdays, Christians pray on Sundays. In Quran, it says that do five-time prayer if you don't do Shabbat. And then at the end of the same Quran says, if you are working hard all day and you can't do five-time prayers, do your prayers at night. I am saying that you don't have to do your prayers in the weekend. This is not a weekend God. You don't have to do it at night. Do it all the time. Be in prayer. When you're brushing your teeth, thank God or pray to him. When you're driving, it's not difficult to do. Just constantly take any opportunity you get. You have to be thankful to God for what he has given you. Be content with what he has given you. And you will see in the mysterious way things become better for you. And you get money even financially. You get money from places you don't even expect. But you have to verbalize your prayers to God. You have to speak to him. You have to repent if you do something wrong. And if there's any of these commandments that you don't follow or you slip, you have to repent to God. Because after you die, it's too late.
Yeah. So what you're essentially letting us know is that if we follow these seven commandments, we'll feel happier and more fulfilled in our life.
Yes.
And it's a way for us to practice our life.
Yes.
Now, go ahead.
Because I am writing a book, Solarza, about numerology, astronomical, because I had to prove to myself about Genesis and the 6 days, which I realized it was six period and it was space-time. So I came up with this formula that if we do the seven commandments for over 2 months, a week over 2 months, and you see the difference, then don't stop. Just keep doing it because it's very easy to be righteous. These books and these religious leaders make it so complicated. I love Judaism and the rituals, but thinking that if you don't do it, you're going to go to hell, that only makes your soul down. You know, you're not happy with yourself. You have to realize that those are just rituals, and if you don't obey and you obey, it makes no difference. It has nothing to do for your afterlife. All you need to do is follow the seven commandments.
Okay, and so today, are you a practicing Muslim or Christian or Jew?
I just follow the seven commandments. I pray, and I read all the books. I learn from all of the three books because I do believe that this is a pyramid, that these three prophets are the cornerstones of this pyramid, and not one could do without the other two, not any two could do without one. All three of them are necessary for circle of life and the energy of life to circle around them. So every one of these books have something to say. If people come up and say that Quran said that or Bible said that or Old Testament said, they are really going to branches instead of just sticking to the trunk of the tree and see what the message that this prophet gave us, how simple it is to follow.
Well, and so you're, I'm assuming you're not currently participating in the celebration of Ramadan or the practice.
Well, I believe me, during Passover, during Jewish holidays, I try to fast. I try to fast. Because it's for health. Most of these laws are for health. It's really nothing. Circumcision is for health and medical reasons. But I follow as much as I can Judaism, Christianity. Unfortunately, Islam doesn't have that many auspicious occasions. They're too morbid. But I try to do everything that any of these prophets say as much as I can. Well, Ramadan is kind of hard, fasting is pretty hard for me, but I would. I mean, I respect people who fast, Jewish people who fast during Passover, after Passover, and I respect people who fast during Ramadan. Unfortunately, I'm not that good to be able to do it.
One of the things that I found, if I had to do a comparison, I'm not familiar with the Quran, as you are, but certainly from the Old Testament to the New Testament, and I feel that we went from violence and hatred to then a message of peace, inclusion, and love.
Yes.
And yes. I think you've already touched on that this is the part that people miss in a lot of these books, and also it sounds from what you've expressed too, the Quran is really to say embrace that.
That's right. But love
reject, and embrace that.
Something, Solarza, that people don't know really, even Christian, is the fact that Christ, when he said turn the other cheek, he was not being nice. Per Roman law those days, if you strike someone and they don't strike you back, and you strike them again, you're condemned. Or when he was paying tax reluctantly, or when he said you have to be shrewd in business, meaning that you don't let anyone, when it comes to business, you don't cheat anyone, but you should not let anyone cheat you or lie to you. You can't be, you have to be shrewd in business. But killings happened again after Muhammad came because they were non-believers. All through three scriptures, killings have been an act of cleansing non-believers. Now, we don't really have anyone hardly that does not believe there is one God. Very few. And if they're atheists, they're living a righteous life and they're not bothering anyone. So the word jihad should be totally obsolete, meaningless now. Yet, for political purpose, there are a bunch of people that get together and they love to kill, and now we have the social media. It's easy for them to, anybody from America or Paris or anyone who joins ISIS, they are basically serial killers. They love to kill, and they have found an excuse. They go join ISIS, they get good salary, and they get an attaboy at the end of the day when they kill someone. But that's not what the book says. The book is very simple to understand. You shall not kill. You shall not decide for the time that somebody else's life ends or yourself. Even committing suicide is sinful. So you can't decide about money that somebody else has is not yours, because you have to be happy with what God gave you. There is always a reason for you being more successful than somebody else. If you work hard, you do all you can, and you stay righteous, there is no way at the end of the day that you will not have a great, prosperous life. And your happiness, if you're happy with yourself, it reflects in you, in your job interviews, with your boss, with your teacher, it reflects. But first you have to be happy in your soul. You have to have a serene soul.
Mm. Well, I think that that's all important for us to grasp, is that certainly I believe one of the things you're saying is we create our own happiness.
Yes.
How we choose to do it. You've laid out the seven commandments. And I imagine if I were an atheist, the only thing I would do is drop it, believe in one God. But I could still apply 2 through 7.
And I wouldn't show off about it. You know, sometimes when these people are atheists, they keep bragging about it. There's nothing to brag about. You're living a righteous life, good for you. But don't try to confuse other people, you know. If somebody believes in God, because we are very arrogant to think that our technology has made us arrogant to think that we can prove the existence of God by calculations. No, you have to believe in God and have faith wholeheartedly, without wanting any proof.
So that also goes the other way, though, doesn't it? Is that if we're a believer in God in a certain religion or something, once again, we don't need to be arrogant about it to other people.
That's right, exactly. But well, you
what
won't
the United States says is that we have the right to freely practice our religion, but it doesn't say we have the right to freely impose our religion on other people.
That is actually non-religious. If they're they're not religious people. If they try to enforce their religion or their belief on other people, that's that very thing that is wrong and makes us not religious. If we were religious, we wouldn't show off about how much money we have, how much money we give away, what religion are we. We don't try to force other people to our opinion. We can guide them to the righteousness if we see somebody is not doing the right thing. But you can't force your opinion on other people. Everybody has to have the confidence in their own ability to be able to make rational decisions based on logic and not whim.
So I want to remind folks that we've been talking with Sherry Sharifi Brown, the author of The Seven Commandments for Happiness and Prosperity, and they can go to 7commandments.com. There's also a link on the guest page of goodvibrationsradio.com. And this is about the essential truths that are common ground in the three major world religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And it shows where they come together. Sherry has had a wide experience being born a Muslim in pre-revolutionary Iran, converting to Christianity in the United States, and also marrying into an American Jewish family. So she has experience, she has background, she has knowledge, she has wisdom, which she shares in the Seven Commandments for Happiness and Prosperity.
Thank you.
So, Sherry, I want to thank you so much for
the interesting
conversation and for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you. It was truly a pleasure.
Thank
you. So we're going to let the listeners know that we will be replaying this show at 5 p.m. Pacific time today as well. And we will be back with more Good Vibrations Radio tomorrow, 5 to 6 p.m. with Wellness Wednesdays with Sherry Dr. Felton. And as we close out today, Sherry, we're going to close out with a little clip called Old Time Religion.
Give me that old time religion. Give me that old time religion. Give me that old time religion. It's good enough for me.
Well, it was good for Paul and Silas. It was good for Paul and Silas. It was good for Paul and Silas. It's good enough for me.
Give me that old time religion.
Give me that
old time religion.
Give me that
old time religion. It's good enough for me.
It was good enough for mother. It was good enough for father. It was good for sister and brother. It's good enough for me. Give me that
old-time religion.
Give me that
old-time religion.
Give me that
old-time religion. It's good enough for me.
And it was good for the Hebrew children. It was good for the Hebrew children. It was good for the Hebrew children. Good enough for me. Give me that
old-time religion.
Give me that
old-time religion.
Give me that
old-time religion. It's good enough for me.
It will take us all to heaven. It will take us all to heaven. It will take us all to heaven.